please the court, I'm Victoria Johnson on behalf of the Commonwealth. This court should affirm Ms. Caswell's conviction. Caswell's conduct subjected S.E. to a substantial risk of serious injury and death when Caswell disregarded simple safety precautions and left S.E. unsupervised despite the open and obvious threat and obvious danger of the swimming pool. This court has, in other child endangerment cases, set forth a number of factors for the consideration of trial courts and of this court on review. I relied on the Barnes case in my brief, and I submit that each of those factors militate towards affirmance in this case. The first factor is the gravity and the character of the risk of harm that the child is subjected to. Here, the obvious danger was that swimming pool. Ms. Caswell had been to the house before to various pool parties and whatnot. She knew that the child was not allowed to go into the swimming pool. The child had asked her to go swimming earlier in the day.
And Mr. Johnson, let me interrupt you. Wasn't the argument the appellant made in reference to that particular issue is that she wasn't told that she was told she couldn't go outside because of the heat, not because of the pool?
She was told that she could not go outside because of the heat. There was a heat advisory that day. However, the swimming pool was there, and the defendant knew that the swimming pool was there. I think anyone who has spent any time around small children know that small children are always interested in getting in the swimming pool.
There was no indication that the victim in this particular case could actually open the door. There was indication that the brother could, but not that the little girl could. Is that correct?
Respectfully, Your Honor, I believe that is not the record. I believe that the record was at Appendix 146 that the father of these children thought that the daughter could open the door and told the babysitter, Ms. Caswell, that he would block the sliding glass door to prevent them from doing that with a toy box that had noisy toys in it so that if they tried to open it, it would make noise.
I guess the question was not artfully asked. There's no specific indication that the little girl could actually open the door. There's sort of a generic thing about, I put the toy box here to block it so that it can't be open. But the appellant's argument is there's nothing specific that she could open the door.
Well, Your Honor, I think that there was a conflict in the evidence that the jury could resolve there. The specific testimony in the record is that the father thought that the child could open the door, the little girl, and that he therefore instructed Ms. Caswell to take certain precautions to prevent the door from being opened. I submit from those two pieces of evidence, the jury could reasonably find that there was enough notice that this 3-year-old child could open the door. Furthermore, even if it was the 2-year-old brother who they thought could open the door, I don't think that makes a big difference, because either one of the children being able to open the door would lead to the children being able to go outside.
Ms. Johnson, I'd like to ask you about a recent case. I think you're familiar with White versus Commonwealth.
I am familiar with that case, Your Honor.
Is that a case final now?
Yes, Your Honor.
I realize that White involved a different statute, but both of the statutes involve the concept of criminal negligence, willful wanton negligence. Mm-hmm. And I'd like for you maybe to expand a little more on why you think White does not control the outcome of this case.
I think that White differs from this case in two important ways. First, the White case, to my understanding, turned on whether the defendant in that case had notice of the danger that her child was exposed to, that closed septic tank in the backyard that had the lid over it. That's kind of where the notice element is kind of where that case fell. Here, there is no doubt that this defendant had notice of the swimming pool. She'd been present at the house before. She was also told not to let the children out in the heat advisory. And I think that that's probably a danger that she could, that she should have prevented the children from going outside of. But here, there's no problem with the notice.
In White, the defendant clearly was aware of the existence of the septic tank, because I believe in White she had told the child, mm-hmm. don't stand on the lid, for obvious reasons.
Right.
Here, the defendant knows of the existence of the swimming pool, but is there any evidence that the defendant was aware that that swimming pool posed a substantial risk to the child?
I think the answer is yes for two reasons. First, we have the Duncan case, Your Honor, and that was the wine cooler and the baby bottle case. And there the Supreme Court of Virginia said that a jury is entitled to use its common sense and find that something is dangerous to a child. I submit that the common sense would fit here. Also, in this case, there was no cover on the swimming pool. There was no fence around the swimming pool. The swimming pool was open and could be accessed by going out the sliding glass door, down the stairs, and there was the swimming pool. I think also the defendant was on notice that this little girl wanted to go swimming that day. She had expressed an interest in the swimming pool. And that may not rise to the kind of fascination that the child in Barrett had with playing in the bathtub, but it does show that interest. Another distinction, I think, between this case and the White case is that in White, the defendant was the children's mother. And the defense theory in the White case was that this was an exhausted mother who had been up all night with an ailing infant and took a nap. Here we have a babysitter who was on the clock. This was someone who was charged for a set temporary amount of time to take care of those children. That was her only job. And I submit that kind of relationship is different than a parent relationship. And the courts...
Are you saying that's different as it relates to the court's determination of criminal negligence, or are you indicating that there's a factual distinction?
I think that there's a factual distinction, and I know that in the appellate cases, there has been discussion of how a parent is the best one to determine the child's maturity and ability to be alone, to take care of itself on its own.
Well, by that argument, would that mean that the person, such as a babysitter, would be more removed from that type of factual determination? Because they know less.
Yes, Your Honor. That's exactly my point. Here, the babysitter knows less and disregarded the parent's instructions to block that door. The door was easy to open. Ms. Caswell told the social worker who interviewed her later that same night that the door had little to no resistance and was unlocked at the relevant time. The police officers who investigated the scene that same day determined that the door was easy to open and that one could hear the door opening from the kitchen. Here, this babysitter only had to follow the father's instructions to block that door so that she could either keep the children in the house or be warned when the children attempted to open the door that there was something going on. These children were 3 and 2 years old. They should not have had access to be able to go outside on a heat advisory day, much less have access to be able to go outside to an unguarded 5-foot-deep swimming pool.
Ms. Johnson, these cases, unfortunately, are not infrequent.
No.
Perhaps after the White case, I've been a little more aware in reading news events. And I want you to help me with this. How do we write an opinion accepting your argument here without establishing almost a strict liability standard on parents, babysitters that have children in proximity to swimming pools?
And I recall this issue coming up in the White argument as well, not to crisscross a little bit here, but I believe that each of these cases, and this goes to Barrett, to Ellis, to Duncan, to Barnes, each of these cases is fact-specific. We look at the particular circumstances in each one of these cases. Here, it's not merely that there was water available. It's the whole panoply of events that happened in this case. The parent gave clear instructions to the defendant as to how to block that door and prevent the children from going outside. The parent told the babysitter, don't let the children outside. The babysitter was there at the house on previous occasions and knew that there was a swimming pool. She'd been there to pool parties. This child was absolutely not allowed to go swimming. She wore a swimming suit with a flotation device. I submit that from Ms. Caswell's testimony that she had been to pool parties and that the children had been present, and the father's testimony that this child could not go swimming without a flotation device, the jury could have found that Ms. Caswell knew this child could not go in the swimming pool without a flotation device.
Isn't that one of the most determinative factors in these cases, that you have enough evidence to establish that the defendant had knowledge of the risk?
Yes, Your Honor.
If you look at Ellis, I think
yes,
that's the decision I wrote, which was not easy either. But I think it turned on a finding that the defendant didn't know that she had left the premises having failed to turn off the gas.
Yes, Your Honor.
It wasn't just negligence, which that you could argue it was negligence. Mm-hmm. And you're saying here there was enough to establish knowledge of the risk.
Yes, Your Honor, and I submit that is the key fact in these cases.
I actually think I don't know White, actually, so I don't know how that turned, but it doesn't matter. I'll get to it.
Sure.
But is that important?
Yes.
It seems important to me.
I think it is the key factor in these cases. It's not merely that there's a swimming pool or that the parent takes a nap or that the babysitter falls asleep or what have you. It's that there is a known appreciable risk, and we know that that child is exposed to that risk. And we look at all of these different factors. We look at the age of the child. We look at the nature of the danger of the risk. For instance, in Ellis, Ellis, of course, predated Barnes. Mm-hmm. But look, in Ellis, that was almost a freak accident. You know, the mother just forgot to turn that burner off. It's very common, you know, back in the day to light that. I remember my own grandmother doing that, lighting that cigarette on the burner. She just forgot to turn the burner off and went, I believe it's 30 or 50 yards to a neighbor's house, and was only gone for 15 to 30 minutes. And during that time, this freak accident happened where not only had she left the burner on, but the house caught fire. Here, though, there's more foreseeability. Here, these children, we know about the swimming pool. We know that they wanted to go in. The little girl wanted to go into the swimming pool. We know that they can open the door. We have to block the door. No one did any of that. Here, though, we have someone who...
But counsel, would the failure to block the door alone, in your mind, equate to criminal negligence?
No, Your Honor. I don't think any one of these factors is dispositive standing on its own.
And isn't Ellis distinguishable? Because Ellis is really more of an abandonment case in terms of which you look at the time that they're gone and things of that nature, where this is not quite the same.
I think, Your Honor, and you know, I was thinking before my argument today, I'm getting real close on my time, so I apologize to the court, but I was thinking today that we do see kind of a different analysis based on the kind of abandonment. You know, in Gibbs, which is an unpublished case that the court recently decided, the child was left alone, this little child, he's 5 years old, was left alone while his father went to a meeting at a school, left him completely alone in the apartment. Child got out, wandered around, wound up at the Costco parking lot across the street. This court found criminal negligence and affirmed.
That was a very close case, and I think we indicated such at the conclusion when we said that case turned on its unique facts, one of which was that the father was aware that the child had a propensity to wander out of the apartment at times.
Right. And it was a close case on its unique facts. This is also a case on its unique facts. Here, while there's no evidence that the babysitter would have been in a position to know that the children were apt to wander, instead there was evidence that the babysitter was told that they can get outside, evidence that this child wanted to go swimming, and evidence that she absented herself in some way.
There also was, I think, the implication by inference that the access to the pool was through the door that was to have been blocked.
Yes, Your Honor, that's exactly right.
This is
the door led directly to the deck down the stairs, and there's the pool that has no fence around it, no cover as in White.
So she was told that the door had to be blocked, and indeed, that seems to be the only way the child could access the pool.
Yes, Your Honor, and as a matter of common sense, a reasonable person would keep children aged 2 and 3 years old away from an unguarded, unsupervised swimming pool that's 5 feet deep. I believe that my time has expired.